Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome. So we are thrilled to have you here, Pierre. Glad to have an expert, a speaker on building better teams on the pod. Please, could you introduce yourself and share kind of what you're best known for?
All right. Thank you so much for having me. It's always fun doing a podcast and especially with you guys. So my name is Pierre, as you said, and I build teams that matter. So the things that I'm known for is speaking and teaching and inspiring people, and also for being a designer and working in the design world. So my world is always like product, all crazy kind of designs, and then people, because I believe people, good people build good things, good teams build good things. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
You help companies reduce this kind of customer churn by creating really great products, also creating like great brands and creating kind of great customer experiences. I wonder, could you kind of talk us through where you begin with all of this? Like, where do you start in this whole process?
When I engage with a business to design a product or a service or any sort of even a brand, is to start thinking about it holistically. And I think that's probably the biggest mistake that people make as well, is they don't think about their entire journey. What is the totality of the experience that you're trying to create? Because a product isn't just a product. You're not buying just, unless you're maybe buying a wrench. And even then, when you're just buying a little tool, there's a narrative and there's a story that goes along with it, why you chose that specific brand, why you chose that thing. And I think where we start is trying to look at the entirety of journey, like really like an eagle's eye view, and then see, can we map out the entire experience and see where things are not working, or where maybe customers are dropping off, or where they aren't liking, or where they are subscribing, what they are liking, and how can we amplify that? So taking a look at everything first is where we start. So really big, and then really go really small and focused.
What are the most common mistakes that you see? Kind of, are there any pitfalls that could be avoided from the very beginning if you know about them?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the pitfall is that people start too late thinking about the entire journey, and they only think about in little small chunks. And then if you think holistically, it's like the difference for me between eating an orange, eating an apple. So designing a product, designing an experience is like eating an apple. So the way you eat an apple is you take a bite of the whole thing. And the way you eat an orange is you dissect it and trying to get it into like these little tiny, you know, if you're a freak like me, you go take the little cells out and do like all these little weird things and like dissect it. But the way to design an experience is to not dissect it, to start with the whole, to think about the first time somebody sees your brand or comes across your brand or your product on whether it's social media or hearing about it from a friend, they create an image in their mind, a little narrative about what your brand or what your product is about. And if you don't start there, then you have a problem. If you only try and work on only the actual product or the actual service and not care about the journey before or the journey after, that is one of the biggest mistakes that people make.
I think that's such an interesting, and I love the analogy as well. I wonder, do you have kind of any, what would your advice be to leaders in the kind of companies that, if leaders want to kind of elevate their time, what advice would you give them to kind of focus on their people strategy rather than just delivery?
Firstly, leaders have to understand the importance of having a people strategy. And these two things, while my work is design and helping people build products, we've done a lot of that. Most of my energy now goes into helping people build good people and good teams. So like if you want to create really great products, if you want to create really great business, you need good people. You need good people, and you need good people working together in a team. And it's been said a couple of times by many different people is that you can have the best tech, you can have the best product, you can have the best advertising, you can have most funding and still fail miserably if you don't have a solid team. Because the team is the one variable that you can't actually leave out, that you actually need to focus on properly. The question, one of the questions that were asked, that I heard asked a while back is, would you want a team of superstars all rowing in their own direction? Or do you want a team of mediocre players all rowing in the same direction? And that's the difference between having, that's what the difference a team makes. If you can get everybody in the business to row with all their might in the same direction, you can actually get there. But the moment people start rowing kind of everywhere and they're all wanting to build their own little halls of fame or whatever, then you have like a big mess. So the first thing for a leader to do is to realize that people are incredibly, incredibly important to your business. The business isn't the product. The business is the people, and then the people build the product. So if you have a good team, then they can build a great product, and then you can actually have a business.
I think that leads very nicely onto something we've talked about before. So it would be great kind of if you could talk through your ideas of kind of the who first, then what, and also kind of like teams to tribes mentality.
So who first, then what? I think it was Patrick Lencioni that coined that, or said that. A couple of other people have also said it in the past. And similar to what I just said now is like choosing who you want to work with, because products change. And anybody that's been in business for longer than, I don't know, 3 months knows that the product changes. So you think you're starting out selling this type of widget and you end up selling something completely different because for whatever reason, that's what the market wants, or new tech has arrived, or you've got funding, whatever the reason is. But the people actually stay the same. So when once you build a great team, then that team can build whatever product you really need or you see the need for. So not hiring people solely for what. It's so funny to me when we work with people strategies, like you often hire people for a function. I mean, all the time you hire people for a function, but hardly ever do they remain in that function for the entirety of their journey in the organization. People move around, they change, they grow. And to make peace with that, to realize that that is what you're actually hiring, is you're hiring the person with all their talent, all their gifts, all their interests, all what they are going to become if you nurture them and you work with them. That's what you're actually hiring and putting into the business, not a function. Like if you want a function, you can go to ChatGPT, or you can go and like find a Mechanical Turk, or you know, find a big online website where you can get somebody to make the widget, do the spreadsheet, whatever you want. But getting a person in, you're bringing the entirety of the person in with all their gifts, their character, their personality, and all of that. And that's really important. And to understand what type of people you want to work with, what type of people you actually want on your team, is something that people don't think about it. Don't think about it until it's too late. So the main part of a hiring process should not only be what can this person do, but who are they? Is this the type of person that I want in my business and on my team? And not enough people ask that question. And then they ask it as sort of an afterthought, like, are they a culture fit? Yeah, I'm sure it's fine. But we really need a dev guy right now. It's like, you know, you need the right dev guy. It's not the same thing.
To pivot it ever so slightly, talking about kind of maybe changing cultures, changing or building different products. Throughout the whole process, I'm sure it's a very kind of chaotic atmosphere going on. Some people are very kind of motivated, are very pushed on by this kind of atmosphere of building stuff. But I'm guessing most people kind of get to a point pretty early where it kind of gets just a bit too distracting. I wonder kind of what is your advice for like dealing with this chaos? Perhaps if you could speak, kind of talk about advice to perhaps like an individual person, as well as advice to kind of a team or a company leader.
The biggest thing, well, when you enter into times of chaos in a business, which happens if you're a startup, it's sort of constant chaos and there's constant stuff going on all the time. It's one of the basic things you have to have in place is trust. If I, as an employee, was a member of the team, could trust that the leadership has my best interest and also the interest of the company really at heart, it's a lot easier to navigate chaos and quick sort of turns and changes where, for example, like I might not know the reason for the product change or for this new strategy. but I trust that the people who decided that do. And that's really difficult. I mean, and trust needs to be built a long time before chaos hits. So it's very difficult to build trust within chaos. And trust is built by, I always joke when I talk about this with companies, trust is built by like exactly the way your mom taught you. Make a promise. If you make a promise, then you keep your promise. And that's how you build trust. And then if you break your promise, you go back and you say you're sorry and you ask how you can fix it. And that's the basic of trust. This is not, like, it's not rocket science, but it's frightening how ego gets in the way of that. I don't want to admit my mistakes. I don't want to say that I was wrong. I couldn't keep my promise. And half of it was because I was lazy, because it was my fault, or just because we didn't communicate that there was changes happening in the back end, that we didn't communicate to the team properly. And now all of them, everybody's surprised because it's a new direction. So really focusing on keeping your promises, making promise, and it starts with making promises that you actually can keep. And often in a startup environment, chaotic kind of environment, many a startup founder that I've spoken to as well tend to make really big and lofty promises, and then which they aren't able to deliver on, which is bad, because then once trust gets broken, it's very difficult to get it back. So building trust is the foundation for dealing with chaos. And then within chaos, once you have that trust and you know these are my people, they have my back, we've been through like all this stuff together, then you can trust that they're making the right decisions and you can follow without question, which helps in times of chaos.
Do you think that there's such thing as kind of good chaos and bad chaos? Or is it kind of, it's whether during that chaos, whether there's trust or not? How do you kind of see that?
There's definitely something like good chaos and bad chaos. You don't want to ever remain in chaos for too long. You need to get back to some sort of order, because order is really what makes money at the end of the day. So when the machine of business is actually turning and all the numbers are right and everything is churning out, the whole thing is working, then that's what makes money. But what happens in business is that the rot sort of starts to set in certain systems and processes, and you don't really see it until it's too late. And what chaos does when something happens and it shakes up a business and something, whether it's a national event, political event, or crash or whatever it is, or a competitor releasing something else, it shakes the business. And all of a sudden, you are forced to then change and adapt and kind of to restore with the goal to restore order again. But also the gift of chaos is then you can see what has actually been rotten for a while. And you can go, oh, okay, this is why this broke so easily. The moment the competitor launched this or this happened in the economic landscape, it shook our business so hard because we didn't have proper foundations in this part of the business, or we didn't really think about these things, or whatever that may be, whether that's like financial strategy or systems or processes, whatever it is. So in that way, chaos is really good because it forces you to relook at everything. It forces you to redesign and then find a new order and a new rhythm. And you can never go back. And that's the mistake people make in chaos, is they want to try and restore the order, but you can't restore the order. You have to go back and you have to go forward and create a new order, find a new way of doing things, a better way of doing things. And that's the gift that chaos brings. But if you don't have leadership, if you don't have the trust of the leadership to take a business through a chaotic time, it'll break it, because then people can become very selfish. They can try and only protect their little bit, try and hold on to resources as long as they could, or people would leave the business thinking that it's gonna go down anyway, or whatever that is. So you need that good leadership to take a business through chaos and to understand what chaos does and what it actually can bring for a business as a gift.
What's your approach in helping someone kind of, let's call it, like, understand their calling in a professional sense? Like, how do you find out what's driving them in business?
That's a very good point. Like, the whole is definitely greater than the sum of its parts. But if you start with poor parts, like, you're not going to have anything. There's no sum to be greater than. When you start talking about calling and purpose and meaning inside of a team or in your career, meaning and a purpose tends to happen when people can make a change. They can add something and they can add some sort of value, and they can see the result or the fruit of their labor. So they can see that I added this thing to the team or to the idea, to the product, and I can see the change that it's bringing for our customers, the change it's bringing for the business, the profit that it's making, or whatever the change is that you seek to make. And that is an extremely important thing to be sure. And that's the job of the leader, to be sure that every person inside of the team has a part that they play that works in conjunction with the other parts. And if that person is gone, it means like that part doesn't actually get done. So then that person is useful to the team, and they feel useful and productive, and they can see the change that they're seeking to make. And that brings meaning, and that helps a person to move forward. So also the role of the leader is to continually cast the vision of where this is going. What are we actually doing? What are we actually building? And where do you fit in? Those are kind of the two big questions that every team member needs answered by their leader. It's like, what are we doing? What are we actually working on? And then where do I fit in? What is the part that I do? And in a good team, it depends on the size of the team, but in a good team, you have people playing specific roles and they aren't all doing exactly the same thing. That's not really a team. That's more a department of, say, accountants or designers or devs. But when a people is sort of interdependent, it's like, I'm doing this part of it, and then you're doing that part of it, right? You're not doing my job, I'm not doing your job. It's two different things. Then that becomes a team, and that becomes a really healthy team. And in that space, you can find your vocation and your calling. My calling is to do this. Like, so for example, if there's a big pile of dirt and two people moving the dirt is not a team, it's just two people moving dirt. But if there's a big pile of dirt and one person is moving it and the other person is taking the dirt and then spreading it out on the lawn or using it to fertilize or whatever, that's a team. So when building teams, you have to be sure that you're working with a team and not actually a department as well. That's like a very important distinction, because often people think that they have a team, but it's actually a department, which is a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And fantastic advice too. With that part, we've talked about all, kind of we've got that teaser of the advice that you could give. So we have a few kind of quick fire questions to ask. How would you describe your taste in interior design?
I would like to think that it's really minimalist. Like I my whole Pinterest board is just like all these minimalist, like woody and like light on some like Mediterranean island. But in reality, it's filled with like multicolored books and toys and anime characters. And I'm a little bit of a hoarder. I think that's why I just like all the minimalist things on Pinterest and like Instagram.
What's your signature dish to cook to impress friends or family?
We are meat eaters. And the signature thing that I cook is a lamb chop that is about an inch and a half thick and done roasted on a smoker with a special kind of rub spice, which is absolutely freaking delicious.
In another life, what would your career be?
I don't know. That's a good one. Maybe I want to say architect, maybe. Yeah, that's so close to what I do already in a weird way. Yeah, maybe some sort of architect or artist.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Let it go or be dragged. So a friend of mine told this to me a couple of years ago. And it's about carrying grudges and past hurts and whatever it is in your life that you really do know that you need to let go of. So, and she added this little bit. Like everybody says, let it go, let it go, let it go. And she added this little thing that says, or be dragged. And I really like that because it gives this very powerful image of this thing that you hate or this grudge that you have or this thing that's hurt you or whatever, this person maybe, whatever it is, dragging you behind them and going, that's a shocking enough image for me to then let it go.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
11. Let me explain how weird I am. So I have a pair of purple, but they're actually lilac Crocs with like gibbets, and like one of the gibbets have like a blinking light on it, which I love to wear like all the time. They're terrible. They're so bad, they're good.
Thank you so much for your time, for sharing with us kind of some insights and about your expertise.
Great, thank you for having me. It's been lots of fun.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.